Hey, yo. That's the perfect way to start this intro, because this episode is just the Badger and myself, and it's a lot about wrestling. It's also a little bit, or a lot of bit, about The Last Dance, a little bit about baseball and how sports are coming back, NHL and things like that. And then it's about Rick and Morty. It's about a lot of things. What it is about is I had a rough time a couple weeks ago trying to lock down an episode with the Badger. And yesterday I was able, or Friday, I was able to do it, just he and I, and we had a great time. So I hope you enjoy the episode. Also, I think you need to go back and listen to Pandemic Sessions 12 and check out Operation Triage's Freedom Jam featuring Carly Rogers and a whole slew of other people. I say Carly because she was on this episode, but it's for a good cause. It's on August 29th. It's in St. Peter's at the Diamond Music Hall and Bar or something like that, but it's on in St. Peter's. That's all you need to know. Tickets are $10, $20 for a rail, $100 for a table. All go into a great cause supporting first responders, veterans, things of that nature. So check that out. Also, feel free to go check out Beer Sauce Shop's second location in Sunset Hills. And go check out the first location now that they're back open. And then they had some great news recently, too. They signed a lease on their third location. So everything's moving along great for the Beer Sauce boys, and everything's moving along great for the PC Bombcast. So after this bomb, listen to all that stuff I talked about with me and the Silver Badger now. It says Silver Badger.
What's up, man? Can you hear me?
That is a screen that says Silver Badger, and that is some slick hair for the Silver Badger.
This is my professional wrestling hair, baby.
Yeah, I kind of see what direction we're going to be going in today.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I guess on that note, we might as well start. Before I say we are back, I guess I did say we are back. Nice Halloween cup you're drinking out of there.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a little too early for booze, so just drinking a nice glass of H2O and...
You know what? I went the other direction. I think it's a good time for booze. Missy gets off early today. I'm off today. It's booze 30 in my world.
There you go. We've been on Fridays treating ourselves to narwhals in the streets of St. Charles. Narwhals is a frozen cocktail place that they've the state of Missouri has extended where you can take the cups to go.
Yeah, yeah.
15th. So I don't know if we'll do that tonight or not, but
I'm aware of Narwhals. I have not been there yet. We got a pretty big Friday planned for ourselves, so I don't know if there's time to go by Narwhals, but we're going to go look at some furniture. We're going to get new living room stuff.
Oh, wow. Where are you going? Weekends only there, big guy?
No, we were going to try that Bob's discount. Or whatever, and because online they look like the quality's good and the price is okay. We don't know yet, Tom. We're gonna go look everywhere, anywhere that's open, because I don't think furniture is something you should shop for online.
No, I would agree with that.
So,
what about IKEA? Are we too adult for IKEA now?
I don't trust the quality of IKEA for my size. Is what I don't trust.
That's the point.
But so that said, yeah, you only heard two voices. It is the Silver Badger and myself. This is a week belated podcast. I said on the one that was released today that I dropped the ball last week on it, but I probably am going to release this on Monday just to give it through the weekend, let that other one breathe for a little bit, since it was a pretty cool guest on the one I recorded and released today. I recorded a couple days ago and released today. But that said, what have you been up to, my man?
Just trying to stay busy. It's been a lot of wrestling lately. this weekend we have Double or Nothing. I have purchased the pay-per-view, which I am very excited about. AEW is for real, I think.
Oh, I think so too. I think they're getting really good reviewed shows for this the crowdless quarantine. They're managing to capture the TV audience's attention better than the other products out there.
Yeah, and I believe we talked about it last time I was on. It's that simple thing of having the other wrestlers act as the crowd, which WWE still has not done for whatever reason.
Well, because at this point it would be copying, and Vince McMahon refuses to copy.
Sure.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, speaking of Vince McMahon, I don't know if you noticed a lot, but every star who has come over from WWE lately has done a podcast or an interview about their time in WWE and why they left. Mm-hmm. And I'm not getting tired of these stories. It just sounds like the most awful place to work ever.
You know, and that is a shame. And of course, I should throw this disclaimer out there. But obviously, the people that are listening to this point have already know what we're starting on. But I've always said this. Whenever it's just me and John, there's going to be a lot of comic book talk. And whether it's just me and you, there's going to be a lot of pro wrestling talk. Which is why our podcast works, because we all have different things we're into. But it's a shame that that's what the WWE has turned to. It used to be the Mecca, the place everyone wanted to go. It used to be, if you remember in the 90s and during the Monday Night Wars, even at the height when both products, WCW and WWE, were at the top of their game, people, when they left WCW, it was because creativity was being squashed, people were protecting their spots too much, and WWE was where you could go to flourish as a character, to get your shit over, so to speak. Absolutely. That is not the case anymore.
No, the episode I was listening to today was on Jericho's podcast with Lance Archer, better known as the Murder Hawk. This guy is 6'8", 6'9", and he's doing moonsaults. Yeah. Unbelievable freak athlete.
And right away, starting, I guess we should tell people right away, in AEW, starting a promo with not the company's biggest star per se, but their biggest name in terms of influence. Right out of the gate, starting with Cody Rhodes, a feud with Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, absolutely. And they have a big title match on Saturday. And he was telling Jericho how he had a couple calls with WWE 10 years ago, and he was wrestling in the minors in FCW and had pretty much the same gimmick he has now. And then one day he's working on a match, and Vince comes up to him and just goes, yeah, cut your beard, cut your hair. And then a week later, like, totally forgot that he had the conversation with him. And then he was buried.
It doesn't make sense. Yeah, that's just odd. I apologize if you heard a ding. I was going to record this, but I just don't want to do it right now. I was going to do it, and I was like, oh, it goes to my work cloud as well. I got to fix that. I got to swap computers, which ones I'm recording this on. But anyway, back to what you're saying with Lance Archer. And so I used to listen to Jericho's podcast religiously.
Me too.
I haven't listened to it in a while. It's interesting. Is it still going with Jericho? I mean, because Jericho on his podcast is, and I think it's evident in like his, that documentary that he produces on Dark Side of the Ring for Vice. Okay. He loves the business. He's almost as transparent as it gets about the business. And he's, he's the ultimate good guy in talking about the business, but he is the ultimate villain on every other aspect of pro wrestling, because he has put himself over as, we've talked before, he's one of the probably 3, 4, or 5 greatest wrestlers of all time. Yeah. And arguably the absolute best of being a face and a villain.
Absolutely. I mean, he's just such a talented human being as far as not only his wrestling, but, you know, Fozzy, it's a decent band. It's okay. He's done comedy shows that have been okay.
It's here's what Fozzy is. It's a band that you could go to a strip club, see the stripper dancing, going, hey, this isn't a bad song she chose.
Yeah, it's very accurate. But what I like, I gave up on the podcast too, probably about 3 or 4 years ago. I felt like he was trying too much comedy and he wasn't really putting the guests over. And now he's stripped all that comedy out except for the first 5 minutes, and it's just a straight 90-minute interview. It used to be, I feel like some of the shows just be like 2-3 hours long. He's really stripped it down to bare bones, and I think it makes it more of an effective interview.
Yeah, I could see that. I would like to watch the Double or Nothing. I don't think we'll. I mean, I'm not going to do it. I've been contemplating doing something fun like that, buying it on a computer and zooming to where, you know, we could all watch and commentate on it during thing, whether it was something. But yeah, I think that's a good time. So you've been diving in. So I'm guessing you're all caught up on Dark Side of the Ring.
I'm all caught up on Dark Side of the Ring. I missed a couple episodes. If I've never heard of the wrestler before, I usually wait on that one.
The Cocaine Cowboy or whatever. I have not watched that one yet. I think that's the only one I've missed. Of Herb something. Herb Adams.
I missed the Road Warriors one too.
Oh, that was a good one.
I did watch Owens, and it makes you think. I mean, Martha Hart has been portrayed, and that's Owens' widow.
Mm-hmm.
As kind of the villain in a lot of ways the last 20 years, especially with Brett. And getting to hear her side of the story, you can completely understand why there is 0% chance Owen Hart is ever in the WWE Hall of Fame now. They killed her husband.
Yeah, and I knew that she wasn't going to allow it, but there certainly is a... There has been, and she even said it on there, even the boys turned on her. They were like, you can't sue. Even the Hart family, you know, didn't back her up. You can't sue them. Once you see, though, if the documentary is accurate, and I'm not going to say that it's not. I'm not going to say it is. That's not for me to decide. I can only go with the evidence that they present. If that truly is the clip they used, then the WWE murdered him.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way around that. I mean, that... Well,
Jim Cornette has said for years that it was a stupid stunt, that this should never have been used. And
JR as well.
Yeah. And Vince Russo has blood on his hands.
Yeah. Well, Vince Russo maybe is, for even including Vince McMahon, Vince Russo may be the biggest villain in all of pro wrestling history.
He was on Jericho's podcast a couple months ago. I went back and listened to it. He's still doing that whole bro.
Oh, that's his spiel. That's his, yeah, bro. But apparently that's the way he talks. No. It's time to give it up, buddy.
Wrestling is such an interesting, unique art form, and I think it's because it's really the one piece of pop culture that people are almost more interested in the behind the scenes than they are what's actually shown on our TV screens.
Well, and that's probably because for as long as it's been an art form, or as long as it's been a sports or sports entertainment, it's been very short amount of time that we've had behind the scenes access in all the grand scheme of things. So it still appeals to people. And there's so much story and backlog of unique, over larger than life characters, both on screen and off screen, where the stories are great. I mean, you know, the slap heard around the world with what was the name? Dave Schultz. Mm-hmm. I knew the slap. I knew that story, but I knew nothing about Dave Schultz. And that was a great episode.
I had no idea he was going to be probably a really big deal.
The heel. He was going to be the heel that feuded with Hogan. And his whole career was ruined by slapping that 2020 reporter twice. Yeah, you know?
He went to the Jimmy Hart school of the Fountain of Youth. He looks exactly the same as he did 30 years ago.
And I'll tell you just a little... fanboyish, some marking out here. His elbow drop was an awesome, unique elbow drop I've ever seen from the top rope. It was like a diving, twisting elbow drop. I was like,
yeah.
Well, that would have looked great finishing people off. So, I'm not been doing it as much as you, but I have been reading a lot more stuff from Bleacher Report and other things on pro wrestling and catching.
Getting back to I think the people are interested more sometimes in the stories behind the scenes. I think that does cover everything in life. People want to know how things happen. They want to get to know these people on a human level. And I think that's one of the reasons, kind of segue into something else, so I don't want to lose our whole audience today, is how successful The Last Dance was.
Yeah. I know we always joke about hyperbole in me, but this isn't just me saying it. There's a lot of people saying this might be the greatest sports documentary of all time.
Yeah, and it's starting to get a little backlash here this past week. Scottie Pippen's now come out and said that he wasn't didn't like how he's portrayed. And
yeah, but he said the things he said. Okay. The things that they were saying, he came and agreed. If I had it to do over again, I would have set that shot out or that play out.
Right, right.
I mean, it didn't even paint its hero in a great light all the time. Although I will say this, Michael Jordan himself said he was worried about looking like or he wasn't worried, but he thought that people were going to hate him more. My opinion of Michael Jordan didn't change at all. It kind of reaffirmed what we have always thought about Michael Jordan, that he's the guy that would punch his own teammate, that he was the ultimate winner at any price. I did not know any of that stuff about Scottie Pippen, and I got to be honest with you. If you were to tell me that they were going to make Jerry Krause look like a villain, I would have said, well, both Jerrys were villains. They didn't make Jerry Reinsdorf look bad enough until that last episode.
Yeah, I mean, I've got mixed feelings about that. I mean, first off, after the show, I agree. You know, it's probably my favorite documentary I've ever watched in regards to sports. And now that I've had a chance to digest it a little bit, that it's over, a couple things. One, Michael Jordan had complete creative control and editing on that. He's basically the Hulk Hogan of...
Yeah. Well, he's Michael Jordan.
Yeah, he's Michael Jordan.
He's the most powerful man in the history of his sport, and maybe all sports.
Yeah, and so I think I can understand why Scottie Pippen was a little pissed off, because there was some unnecessary, unflattering things towards Scottie in there. I mean, the guy was the fifth highest paid player on that last championship winning team.
Oh,
I
yeah. Mean,
ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
As far as Jerry Krause goes, it's easy to pick on the guy who can't defend himself.
Yeah.
Because Jerry Krause passed away about 3 years ago. It was reported this week that Jerry Krause was working on a memoirs at the time he passed away, and some of that was published. And one of the things that was published was this narrative that Michael has, I guess, spun for years, that he also spun in the last 10 minutes of the documentary, which was we were all willing to come back for a seventh year. And Jerry refutes that. He says, we wouldn't have done that. How big of a selfish asshole do you think I am not to bring the boys together for one last ride? But yeah. Bill was done. Bill did not want to come back. And some of that's on Jerry, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I would say that to that, of course, I mean, of course Michael would say it, and of course Jerry would say that. Mm-hmm. All I could, the one I would defer to, and of course we don't have behind-the-scenes knowledge of this at the time, is Jerry was very vocal. I remember being a sports fan, and at the time I was in college, so ESPN is kind of what I lived off of.
Yeah,
they did not fib. Jerry said all these things at weird times and did all these things like this. They're not coming back, or Phil's not coming back. And, you know, and absolutely Jordan said that if Phil's not coming back, I'm not coming back. And
right.
Yeah. Not that he's not a good GM. In fact, Jerry Krause is probably one of the two or three greatest GMs in the history of the NBA, maybe sports, maybe. But I do believe from the stuff that I remember back in the day, and this documentary kind of reaffirmed it for me, he wanted to be the star. He wanted to be a bigger star than he was being touted. It wasn't enough to win championships and get GM of the year. And when I read those things at the time in Sports Illustrated and watched SportsCenter back in the day, it was that what we said back in the day as an NBA fan was the two Jerrys are ruining this thing. If you were a baseball fan, you were like, if Jerry Krause can get out of that avenue, maybe the White Sox will win more. And they ended up winning a little bit and got him a World Series. Yeah. But it was the two Jerrys. That was their moniker, and it was not said in a flattering way.
Right. Yeah. I think that's fair. Krause content. Scotty wanted to get paid. I don't agree that he would have settled for less. The salary cap, I did some research today before our show. Salary cap in 1998 for The Last Dance was $30 million.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan was making $34 million. The reason he was able to make more by himself than the salary cap of the rest of the team was the NBA at the time, this rule's gone away.
The Larry Bird rule?
The Larry Bird rule, yeah. So if you could re-sign your free agents for whatever, basically. Yeah.
10 years in the league and 7 years with the same team or something like that was the rule.
Right. So
and I'll say this too. Michael Jordan, yes, he was getting that, but Michael Jordan also for the first part of his career was not a very high paid player.
No, he only made $23 million from his first 11 years.
So. Yeah. And then
Scottie Pippen,
he signed a bad deal.
Kind of bad deal, and he should honor the contract. But at the same time, I understand why he was pissed.
Oh yeah,
Scottie Pippen, in my opinion, I know you posted something on Facebook within the last time we've talked about top five players of all time. I'm not saying Scottie was that good, but Scottie, top 25.
Oh God, Scott, the 50 greatest players ever. Scottie's on the list. If there was never a Michael Jordan, would Scottie Pippen ever be the guy he is today? Maybe not, but you know what he would be? He'd be in that Karl Malone conversation. He'd still, he wouldn't be.
I'd put him right there with like Dominique.
Yeah, maybe. But see, I put Karl as Dominique. See, I put Larry and Magic and Barkley and Jordan, obviously, and those guys, and then to me, Karl Malone is a half step below him. And maybe you're right. Maybe Dominique's a half step below. Scottie Pippen absolutely could have been a Clyde Drexler or Dominique Wilkins. He was explosive. He was Dwayne Wade before Dwayne Wade got into the league. And I think that, and I know a lot of people would find this blasphemous, but I think that's the comparison you should try to draw is, would you rather have your number two be a Dwayne Wade or a Scottie Pippen? And I'm not going to lie to you. If I had a Michael Jordan on my team, I don't think that there's another player in the history of the NBA I would take over Scottie Pippen.
They complemented each other really well, and I think that's why Scottie feels a little betrayed by his portrayal in the doc, because he doesn't come off good. And from all accounts, Scottie Pippen is a really, really nice guy.
I think he's a sweetheart, and I think he's a bit naive, and I think, to me, he doesn't come across as bad as he comes across as had bad advice, because he did. That setting out of that last shot, that's a bad move.
And I remember that as a kid, listening to it on the radio, and just like, he's got to be hurt. He's got to be hurt. My dad's like, what the fuck is he doing? He's got to be hurt. And then you find out later, now he's pouting.
And then
God, Tony made that shot.
Yeah, no doubt. And then the holding out of the contract, we all knew. I mean, it was a bad look to opt on the surgery. But like you said, he had to have surgery. And if he's – that's a way of holding out, especially at the time before we had the internet was so rampant. That was a good way of holding out without holding out. Well, I got to have surgery. You know,
Well, the older these players get, especially ones that are successful, they have less and less interest in doing the whole – preseason and all
oh
that.
God yeah
you know what was it right yeah, Roger Clemens, like the last 5 years, always like come around mid-May.
Yeah, and Albert even said when in his big run for, and McGuire in their big runs in St. Louis, both said that you know once it gets to July, August, we stop taking BP in front of everybody because it's too hot, it's too long of a day, you know. So yeah, I mean, these older players, they're entitled to do what they want, especially, you know, at the time, there was not a bigger star in the world than Michael Jordan, and there was not a bigger co-star, with the exception of the Rodman years, than Scottie Pippen. I mean, Scottie was – so, yeah, he wasn't hounded like Jordan, but if Scottie wanted to get out of the limelight, you know, take a day off, things like that, he would be fine. Now, there is an argument to be made, though, that, and they really didn't touch on it, but in 97, the biggest star on that team was Dennis Rodman. Jordan may still have been the most known, but in terms of the media, in terms of what was – and it was because he was such a outlandish person. His star power was not necessarily like Michael's. Michael's was the star athlete, greatest athlete on the planet. Dennis Rodman was a celebrity, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Jordan was kind of catering more to like a friendly kids. You know, I never even knew Bats. I didn't know Michael Jordan was an asshole until – his Hall of Fame speech.
Oh yeah, I knew he was an asshole, but that reaffirmed it.
I didn't know, and that's kind of when, like, I guess the kayfabe, to use a wrestling term, was broken. And then it's like people felt the courage to come out with all these stories. I didn't know about the book. I was never a big NBA guy, so I never read the Jordan.
Oh yeah, see, I never read it, but I knew all about it. I knew the Jordan rules. I knew like when he disappeared to go play baseball. I mean, the rumors were right away in the people I talked to. They're like, man, his dad was killed because of gambling, and I absolutely believe the documentary. I don't believe that was the case.
No, I agree, and I believed that rumor for years and years, and I believed that he went to go play baseball because he was secretly banished. And David Stern's comments on that was priceless. I
mean, yeah.
I know we don't go down this path hardly at all anymore, which is probably a good thing, but it. It reminds you of in this climate of politics we live in now, where it's like there's all these conspiracy theories and rumors and innuendo. And it's just like usually the simplest answer is the correct answer. Occam's razor.
I'll tell you this, and I'm not – like you said, we don't do politics very much. But yesterday or today on the news, the simplest answer was the most accurate answer to me. You know, there's been a lot of flack for Trump not wearing his face mask.
Yeah.
And I get – he went toward the GM plant, and when he was – off cameras, they got some pictures of him wearing a face mask, and there has been a lot of people saying the reason he's not wearing it is because he doesn't want to mess his makeup up, because he wears a ton of makeup. Well, when he got back in front of the camera, they asked him if he was wearing it. He said, yeah, I was wearing it back there. And they're like, well, why aren't you wearing it now? He goes, because I don't want to give you the satisfaction of seeing me in the mask. And I go, well, that's a simple answer that I actually believe from Trump. He's that big a child. Real quick, back on The Last Dance, it was for me a solid 5 out of 5. I tell you what, even though I'm not the biggest Kobe fan, it really gets me excited for next year that Kobe's final season in the NBA has had a documentary similarly filmed, and they're going to release it.
That's cool.
I would love to see, though, the same type of access given to
the last year that Shaq was on the Lakers. Because that's some fallout. That's some turmoil inside the locker room, those two.
If you could pick any athlete to have a series like this, who would you pick and why?
Oh, boy. That's an awesome question. I don't know that I could narrow it down to one athlete. There's a couple guys that I think it would be fun. One, and I know this is not one that a lot of people would pick, but John Jones is such a fuck up in mixed martial arts and also the greatest fighter on the planet. It would be entertaining for the wrong reasons. Okay. But in terms of let's just go with people. Well, let's go with people that you and I know definitely that we've seen. God, I don't know, man. I think that NBA is such a unique sport, and the way the season is and how they, you know, everybody's very close to the court, it lends itself to be really well done for documentaries. I think baseball would be a little more boring, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I think, I would almost say if we were given 100% access, Tom Brady in his New England years, at least the last couple years, to really see if there was a rift between him and Belichick, which there obviously is.
Sure. Yeah, he would be on my list. The other three I think of would be Tiger Woods would be number one.
That's probably the one I think it should be number one for everybody, especially that one year would have been great to see what happened.
It would be his Masters win would be fantastic.
That would be a good one. That would be a good double-edged. They can do it just like this: flashback, flash forward.
Sure. I think Peyton Manning's last year, the Broncos, would be cool.
Wouldn't have to worry about filming a lot of completions.
Yep, and then a little bit off the beaten path, but that was it. 2016 in Rio. Following the men's swimming team with the whole Ryan Lochte nonsense.
That would be a very good one, and that you could put together a good 10 hours probably on that too.
And then the last one I had, and this wouldn't be a national one, but I think locally would be fantastic, would be that 2011 Cardinals run.
Yeah.
Obviously, the freeze magic, but, you know, Tony told the team in August he was done. Nobody leaked it out.
Yeah.
Tony's a fucking psycho, so who knows if that actually happened. Now we're, not coming back. And that was kind of, in a way, the Cardinals' last dance.
Yeah, it certainly was. And we're going to come back to the Cardinals here in a little bit because I want to talk just a little bit of baseball and what their possible plans are and why we haven't seen the actual plan yet. My last thing on the last dance, and I'll see if you – I'll be interested to know if you feel this way. It absolutely was a 5 out of 5. I loved every minute of it.
Great.
My one thing I will say is we were told going into it that it was unprecedented filming of the last season of the Bulls run. I did not feel like it had as much footage about that last season as we were led to believe. In fact, I felt like it was Jordan's Bulls career instead of the last season.
I 100% agree with you on that. Yeah, it didn't disappoint me. I actually liked the way they edited it.
Yeah.
I think they had, over 100 hours of footage?
Something like that. I didn't watch it, but they had the Game 6, his final game. They called it Game 6, the movie, was on this past Wednesday, and they spliced in footage that they filmed. That would have been kind of cool, but I did not have the mood to sit down and watch a whole game.
Sure. No, I'm with you on that. The one thing I've liked that's come out of all this is now they're calling it possibly the brown bottle flu game instead of the flu game.
Yeah.
Never really thought about it before until this documentary. Everybody's heard the flu game, but nobody else on the team got the flu. And then Jordan's like, "Oh, I got food poisoned." And the pizza, they found the pizza delivery guy. I guess he called in to like Barstool Sports or something. It's like, that's bullshit. Jordan claims it was 5 guys. It was just me and another guy. I made the pizza myself. We showed up. Everybody was pissed drunk.
Well, it was done well in that Jordan's man or one of his road guys claimed it. It wasn't Jordan that claimed there was 5-6 guys. There was one guy that claimed it. And the rumor behind that one that has been forever is it was the hangover game.
Yeah.
Like, bad hangover game.
Yeah.
So
you persevered, man. I mean, the guy's a fucking legend.
You know what? And like I said, and there's been a lot of debating and the LeBron conversation. Even one of my family members did it. I get it. I get what all the tools LeBron has. I get it. I would never ever say that LeBron's not an all-time great player. But Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time and the ultimate winner. At a cost to his personality, to his friends, to his relationships, to his teammates, Michael Jordan won. And somebody said, well, look at all the tools LeBron had. He would have been able to play during that physical time. Maybe, or maybe he would have turned into a different player. Maybe he would have turned into a rebounding Dennis Rodman. Maybe he wouldn't have been a scorer because they would have needed his physical frame to be someone tougher. Or maybe he would have shrunk even more. LeBron's not the guy that you think of taking the last shot. In fact, he has made some game winners, but he's passed a lot of them away. Michael Jordan literally passed off two game winners to Paxson and Kerr because he was double teamed, essentially triple teamed on the Paxson one. And he had good shooters with him. So yeah. It was like that. And then the Utah one, Dennis said, my whole plan that game was to just get out of the way. There was no way 23 was not taking that shot.
I think I've said LeBron is better than Michael in the past. I'll cop to it. But after watching this documentary, it's no question. It was Michael Jordan was the greatest of all time.
And
because he cared only about winning. I think LeBron cares about his image. For right or wrong, I'm not.
Yeah, you know. And I think he might be a better person, so he might care about other things as more than Jordan did.
Well, they had that whole thing about Michael Jordan not like endorsing an African American candidate in North Carolina, and you know he had the famous quote, "Republicans buy sneakers too."
Yeah,
I don't. I think he even says, "Was like I'm not, I don't know." Like when we have that sometimes in 2020 with celebrities and athletes like kind of forced to say stuff. It's like, who fucking cares?
He said, essentially, I play basketball. I ain't got time to learn, find out about them. Maybe they don't have policies I like. I just don't. The other thing I'll say too, I was going to say something that, about the one thing a lot of people said, would that Bulls team or how would the Bulls team stack up against the now record holding, Golden State team that got to the 73 wins. I have been a firm believer, even in the middle of the run, that there is absolutely no way that Golden State team could beat the Bulls team. And I don't even think, by the way, that Bulls team with 72 wins was as good as the one that had Horace Grant and Cartwright and all those guys.
Yeah.
I think that was the better team. But people were like, but they could. But every, I mean, Draymond Green is a great player, but you can't tell me that Dennis Rodman would not get him the foul out of the game. You can't tell me that because Dennis Rodman, Karl Malone's an all-time great. He's twice the player Draymond Green will ever be. And Dennis Rodman effectively neutralized him in two series.
And Golden State, though, would have a secret weapon. They've got the coach.
They do have the coach. But here's the other thing, too. Everybody's like, well, Steph Curry can shoot. Steph Curry can dribble and stuff like this. Steph Curry is not big enough to take advantage of a matchup against Jordan or Pippen.
Jordan would make him his bitch.
Yeah, he would. And
you know, no disrespect to Steph Curry, I think he's a top 30 player of all time, easy, if not higher. But I mean, Gary Payton is a top 50 player of all time, and I had no problem with the glove. Was my favorite quote of the whole series.
And Gary Payton's arguably the best on-ball defender in basketball. And Jordan didn't have a problem with it. The last note. We're done with the Last Dance, but. It did pop. I think it was yesterday. A sad note is Jerry Sloan, who was featured on it, did die.
And today.
It was today. Yeah. Yeah. It was early this morning, maybe late last night. But Jerry Sloan, I remember even when I was not, I hated Utah. I was a Bulls fan. I was a Seattle fan. And then, of course, the Magic when they had Penny and Shaq. But whatever it was about Utah. Whether it was the Mormon state or whether it was just Karl Malone was a dirty elbow leading player, whatever it was, I did not like Utah, but I did like Jerry Sloan. He seemed like a great guy.
Seemed like a classy guy. Arguably the best coach never to win a title. I mean, either him or George Karl, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jordan made sure – Jordan and Phil Jackson, probably more Phil Jackson than Jordan because he won all of those with the Lakers – prevented a lot of Hall of Fame coaches 20 for one title.
Or 20 Hall of Fame players were eliminated from the playoffs by Jordan. I did see a funny meme that said LeBron James is the greatest points per game in Game 7 history of the NBA, and it's Pippen and Jordan on the sideline laughing. It said, what's a Game 7?
Oh, yeah. How many did they play? Like two?
Two in their entire championship run, and they were both in the Eastern tournament, not in the finals.
Yeah.
So
it was against Reggie, and then who was the other one?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it was a Detroit one. I don't know. Oh, how bad did Isaiah come across? I mean, you just reaffirmed what you thought of Isaiah.
He's a fucking weirdo, man.
Yeah, by the way, I don't mind. I think of all the people that come out looking bad, Isaiah was fired from the Knicks for sexual assault. So it's okay. It's okay to hate him.
Yeah.
You did mention baseball a while ago, and I don't want to jump too deep into this, but the baseball season is coming back. We do know it's going to be like an 81-game schedule. We don't know the format. There's been a proposed, which I'm okay with, an Eastern-Western to
and
do
the
that.
Players agreed to?
I don't know anything, but I do like that proposal. What I don't like is the DH for both leagues, and I'll tell you why. The St. Louis Cardinals.
It's been staved off for so long that you knew it was coming. I don't like it either. But
I would not like it either way, but I would like it less this way. If you had a full offseason to prepare for having a DH,
sure.
But the Cardinals are poised to have a repeat run into the playoffs, maybe even one of the top 3-4 out of the National League to have a chance at the World Series, a chance, slight chance. They're probably 4 or 5 on that list. But if you add a DH, they drop out of the top 10. They don't have a DH on the team, not one. And it's Yasiel Puig is the best option. There's some talk about Albert coming back. Now, that might be good because it'd be a feel-good story. And as a DH, you could probably get out of him. Somebody asked me, he goes, would this be the way to keep Molina? You think Molina's a DH? And I love him. He gets a statue, but he's not a DH.
Yeah. I mean, no, I see what you're saying. I don't think the offense is good enough. You're absolutely right. If you throw in another factor, it's going to be even worse. I just don't understand it. I mean, you're so worried. I'm going to segue into something else here too with baseball. But you're worried about the games going on too long. You're going to bring in a DH. I mean, that's in my opinion, it's going to extend the game longer.
Yeah, that will extend the game longer. The way I took it is it was also to give yourself bigger rosters, and that would be a way of
getting added, I believe, a 26th person on the roster,
and then have the DH to help make that where you're not putting too much on the managers to worry about how to get those extra players in, because on a short season with limited or no spring training, you do need a bigger roster.
Yeah, I agree with that. Segueing into a show that I finished up during the last time we've talked, Brockmire.
I'm going to start it, so don't spoil it, but give me your thoughts, though.
I'm going to have to spoil one aspect of season 4 just because of...
And that's the latest season, right?
The latest season is season 4 actually all takes place in the future.
Where he's the commissioner of baseball.
And it brings up a lot of things about, some funny, but some potentially, and how baseball's just dying with the youth. I mean, my boys zero interest, and they're only 5 and 2. And I signed my 5-year-old up for baseball this year. He did not want to do it. I'm like, hey, you're fucking playing at least 1 year of baseball, buddy.
Yeah.
The games are too long. It just doesn't. They don't know how to market any. I mean, besides Trout, who's the second biggest star in baseball right now?
I'll give you that baseball does not know how to market stars. That's something the NBA used to be amazing at, and then they lost it for a little while, and they've got it back. But NFL's never not known how to market stars. The NFL's problem is they market a star that ends up beating his wife or something, something, or murdering somebody and hit and run or something. I mean, that's the NFL's problem. But baseball does not know how to market its stars. Did baseball... Also, I think the simple way of getting baseball to thrive again is, one, they need to do a better job, and then maybe they do better than I think, but they need to do a better job of going in and building fields and inner cities and things of that nature and reaching out and getting these kids stuff. I mean, they've done an amazing job in Central America and the Dominican doing that, but in the United States where you want – there's – a wealth of athletes that would love to be the high. I mean, if you're going to be the highest played professional athlete in the United States, it's going to be in baseball. So if they
baseball?
Can't. Yeah. I mean, that's where they've, in terms of salary.
It's the NBA.
It's the NBA?
Yeah, because NBA, the salary cap, I think, is like $100 million. You only got 12 players on the team. I mean, like, backup centers are making like $68 million in basketball.
Yeah, but the biggest sports contracts in North American history are baseball.
Oh, for for the highest pay. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, right? That's what I'm saying. You
the average salary.
Yeah, I'm just saying when you market, I mean, there's a lot of appeal to it, if you want to put it that way. They just don't do a good job of that. And the other thing is, if they want to get some of these kids excited in it, maybe loosen the tie a little bit, allow bat flips, start policing people that are policing the game for stupid reasons.
I read, God, it was a couple of years ago, what the problem hockey and baseball have that the NBA and NFL don't have is in the NBA and the NFL, you go to the pros right away.
Yeah.
Where in baseball and hockey, you're in the minors unless you're like
– unless you're Ken Griffey Jr. Yeah.
Hockey, unless you're Connor McDavid, you're going to AHL for at least a couple of years. When you're in that minor league, you start – you know, it's that Asian culture almost of the loose hammer gets nailed down.
Yeah.
And so, oh, you don't want to upset the boys. It's all about the boys. And, oh, I'm just happy to be here. Boring-ass fucking answers.
Yeah.
Well – boring ass answers can lead to a boring ass product.
I think if you want to know how to make baseball popular, put a documentary of Javi Baez out and the way he plays the game. He's exciting. Mm-hmm. Don't allow a pitcher to plunk a guy for bat flipping. You don't have to stand and admire your home run, but if a guy jumps in exuberance for hitting a walk-off home run like Jose Bautista, Joey Bats did, hit a walk-off home run in a playoff game, threw his bat, watched it for a split second, and then ran. And the next game, he got plunked, and he was known as a shitty person. Now, there may be other things, but that certainly isn't why he's a bad person. That I would have done it. You know, sure. I mean, anybody should. If you hit a walk-off or a go-home home run, series-ending home run, I mean, why do we not shit on Joe Carter for doing it in the World Series? Why didn't he get plunked his next year, you know? It's like the NFL when they banned all end zone celebrations. That right. was a little silly. It was the no yeah. fun league. And now, I mean, it's certainly some of them are redundant, but how many highlights and how much laughing did you do at some of these organized end zone celebrations last year Absolutely. In the NFL?
Yeah. And thank Jeff Fisher for getting rid of that. He didn't like the Bob and Weave.
Well, I didn't like the Bob and Weave either. I wasn't a Rams fan at that point. So I became a Rams fan. Once I got rid of Jeff Fisher, I think I started rooting for him. But now I'm back to not rooting for him. So
fuck that team.
Yeah.
Your big-ass $4 million boondoggle.
So anyway, so Brock Meyer, you said shine the light on some of that and stuff, but I know you've said that that's a great show, and that's one I'm going to watch. In fact, it would be pretty easy to catch up on that one. I also think I'm going to finally give Friday Night Lights a chance.
Oh, fantastic show. Top five for me of all time.
I have shotgunned through Mrs. Maisel on Amazon, which was fantastic. All three seasons of it. Me and Missy, we shotgunned Hunters on Amazon Prime, which was very good.
I heard mixed on that one. So
it was it's not. I tell you what, it's not as smart as I think it wants you to believe, but it has a good plot twist. It's very much Tarantino, almost like
story violence and all that.
Yeah. Just fantasy, historical fantasy is what it is. But it's pretty fun, and Al Pacino's great on it. So I've done that, but. Let's talk about one show that I tweeted about this morning that you and I both are caught up on. And that might be my favorite show on TV as of right now, and that's Rick and Morty.
Okay.
I said that if this show – I think this season so far has been my favorite season. And I put on here if it hasn't reached its peak, then we can't handle its peak because the last night or this last Sunday's episode about the vat of acid – which was made even funnier by the fact that it was mentioned in an episode before then. And then the story circle episode, I think, was the greatest meta episode they've done. And they've done some great ones.
So I've enjoyed the season. No doubt. I mean, no doubt about it. Even in the second episode, too, with the 9/11 joke, it's probably the hardest I've laughed all season so far. They just look at each other like, you're on $2 million. We're not quite ready for that yet. That was pretty good. And they got some hot water for that, too, which
Yeah, but that's what Dan Harmon does.
I guess I doesn't want to so much wrestling here. I feel like old man Jim Cornette here when I say this, but a little too much, especially the story circle one, a little too much wink, wink, nudge, nudge, look at us, break the fourth wall shit, which, okay. But that seems to be the theme of the season, which I'm not as big of a fan of as you.
Yeah, but if you look back, the Inception episode was that way. He's done that quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, he did a lot of that in the Vat of Acid. I mean, that montage with Morty and that girl
was my favorite thing. And how his dad, who's the ultimate fuck up on the show, ruined the whole thing.
And then I did like that. That's right, Morty. I prestiged your ass.
Yeah.
There's a question, because that's probably one of my favorite movies. I'm like, is The Prestige really a good movie?
Oh, it is a great movie. It's got great reviews, too. Yeah, I mean, it's probably, it's without a doubt Nolan's most underrated movie.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
I mean, it's gained more notoriety in
movies. Dark Knight Rises, but we won't get in that argument again.
Yeah, it gained more notoriety and acclaim over time. And they're like, well, maybe it is better than Inception. Maybe it is a little better than Memento, but it's a great movie.
I just wonder where Rick and Morty is going. I mean, and they addressed a lot of that in the story circle one. And basically the message is, fuck off, let's just have fun, which, okay, I mean.
Yeah, the Family Guy way of doing a show, or Simpsons way of doing a show. You don't have to have somewhere to go, per se.
But those shows went on way past their primes, too. And Rick and Morty have, what, a 50-episode deal?
70 episode. But if you, I mean, that's.
And they're what? 10 episodes in that 70 deal?
Yeah, so essentially what they have.
Go ahead, sorry.
So essentially what they have is a 7-episode or 7-season extension is what they got. Now, Dan did say that he doesn't set down to do 10 episodes. It's however many episodes pans out. There may be an 8-episode. There may be a 12-episode season. But, and he also said this is a 70-episode extension, and they have the right, both parties have the right to cancel it at any time they feel like it's done. But he has guaranteed money to make 70 episodes if he makes 70 episodes, he said. And he gets bored quick, so.
Yeah, there's warning signs that the show, because I don't want the show to be like Simpsons or Family Guy that goes on way past its expiration date. I want it to go out on top because I think it's a unique and funny show. It's not, I mean, I'm not as big of a Harmon mark as you are, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a fantastic show. I just, it's a little too much meta for me, but
that's my. I hate to say this because you are entitled to your opinion, even if it's wrong. I think you're being a negative Nilly, which we've accused you in the past of waiting for the other shoe to drop. But no, seriously, I love it. It makes me happy. What makes it even better for me is I don't watch it on Sunday nights because that's usually whatever Missy and I watch together. And then with the work week starting on Monday, it's usually Tuesday or Wednesday by the time I get to it. And then when I'm sitting down and I have nothing, I'm like, there's nothing on TV. I'm like, oh, great. I got the episode from Sunday of Rick and Morty, and it makes me super happy.
So, and then I'm the opposite. If it's something I'm really fucking into, I have no patience. I have to watch it that night. When Rick and Morty, 10:30 Sunday nights, I mean, I'm not working right now, but there's definitely some Monday mornings where I was dragging a little bit because I was forcing myself to stay up for it. And now I'm like, I've watched it by Monday still, but it's been a couple times. It's like 10 o'clock and I'm like,
There's not a 10 o'clock or 10:30 show that I have ever, I can at this point in my 42-year-old life that I can stay up to do. I don't start anything past 10 unless it's reruns of Friends that I'm falling asleep to. There was something you brought up just a second ago or something I was going to talk about, and I absolutely forgot what it was. So we're going to segue off that. But I know what it was. I've heard that Solar Opposites on Prime is a good – or Hulu is a great show, and that is another Harmon Roiland show that has kind of quietly got some traction, and I haven't watched it yet.
What was the show called? Solar Opposites?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I guess this is what we can segue into. Let's talk about some shows that are coming up that I'm excited for.
Sure.
And first and foremost, I think at the top of that list would have to be Space Force. The Steve Carell.
Deep Throat. Yep.
Yeah.
Is it on Apple TV?
No, it's on Netflix, and it is star-studded cast of great people, and John Malkovich, and there's just a shit ton of people, and it's about the guy that is picked to be the new lead general of a brand new branch of army, and the other branches aren't giving him a break either, and he has no idea what to do. And so, and for one, it's Steve Carell. It looks like it's back to the kind of humor that made Steve Carell famous. And and it also, it's so reflected in reality when we unveil the flag and all that ridiculous stuff that's going on with Space Force.
Unbelievable.
It's going to be great. I mean, it just looks great. I can't wait.
the Space Force, I don't know too much about it. Are they going to make their own ships?
Dude,
I mean, that's serious.
That's part of the, if you haven't watched the trailer Space Force, it's worth watching. He watches a test and it blows up. And he goes, well, that's not good.
Yeah.
And he goes, how much did that cost us? $40 million. Oh.
Could put machine guns on the old Discovery in Columbia and just ride around on them like cowboys.
A bigger black eye in American history, or not black eye, or bigger head scratcher when Reagan created Star Wars or Trump created Space Force?
Definitely Space Force is by far worse because the Russians actually believe Star Wars is going to happen.
Yeah, so. The internet was not what it is today, so people thought that there was lasers up there to shoot down the nukes as they were shooting up into the air.
They go over Star Wars a lot in the show The Americans.
And that's another one I haven't gave a chance to yet. Have you watched it all?
Hook, line, and sinker, and now the Russians are paying us back by sending all these memes and stuff, so your Aunt Karen is like...
The Russians are beating us in their meme game, and the Chinese are beating us in their virus game. I'm convinced the more the world turns, the more... I'm not a person that says I'm convinced biblically that the world's coming to an end, but I am convinced now between the moves that, the politicized environment that COVID has turned into and how it started and how we got here for the election, I am convinced that we are being systematically destroyed as a country by all of our enemies at once, both foreign and domestic.
Obviously, we won't probably be alive for this, but if I could place a future bet and give it to John or Teddy Hummel's children, I will bet that there will not be 50 United States in 2100. I would feel very comfortable in 80 years the Union breaks at some point. Or, on the positive, we get more states.
I'm more thinking that we get more territories and states between Mexico and all these things, but... Judge Dredd is inevitable. The Mega City One and the Wastelands. I mean, it is. I'm telling you. And again, not to get too political, but I am so over both parties' take on coronavirus. We have an amazing amount of doctors in this world that aren't into politics and aren't on boards like Fauci and aren't on TV shows that I think we should be talking to and asking them their opinions. The least opinion we should ever listen to is Donald Trump and Nancy Pelosi. Those opinions automatically don't count because they're automatically going to go so polar opposite of what each other thinks that it drives me insane.
Well, I mean, if you spend any time on social media, it's either this thing is a hoax or millions still could potentially die if we open it up too quickly. There is, and it's not just COVID, and I don't.
And you can find the numbers to back that either way. Yeah.
You can't have a moderate opinion anymore in this country.
I mean,
I personally think that what we did when we did it was perfectly acceptable. But the evidence now shows that it's time to open things up again. Let's do it slowly and responsibly.
Make a targeted quarantine, which I think we probably could have done earlier and maybe avoided some of this. I think when you see things from just as a St. Louisan, when you see today announcements today, like St. Louis had the most famous vodka bar in America, the Sub-Zero Vodka Bar. It's permanently closed. There's a lot of permanently closed places that were... and I guess
is that because of COVID or because the CWE's turning a dump?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. It's also hard to say some of these people that are close. I think there is legitimacy to the fact that some of these businesses are closing. Maybe weren't well-run businesses to begin with. Couldn't pivot. But I also believe that, I mean, we've got good friends in the beer sauce shop that are a relatively young company. They have survived.
It sounds like
exactly. Andrew, not only have they survived, but Andrew said that their sales have been good and that the curbside pickup has not been bad for them. In fact, they said they've had a hard time staying on top of orders some days because they flood in. Their second location opened. Now, people are buying into it by being owners of the location, but then they just signed the lease for a third location. That goes to tell you that you can make it work. You can make it work. But so that said, though, there is businesses that will close that this absolutely impacted them. There's no way around it.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And I think the biggest impact will be in the long term that it won't be the death of Cube Life, but it will be drastic. You're not going to see another huge skyscraper in St. Louis ever again. Just won't. Those 80-story buildings are not, I don't think St. Louis has one that tall, but there's no point because it's proven that people can work from home in a lot of ways and still be as effective.
Yeah, if there's one example that the experiment is a failure, it's New York, where you're stacked on top of each other, and that's the worst place in the United States.
Well, and also Cuomo put all the old people back into the retirement homes because they didn't have enough hospital beds, and they have killed like 4,000 people.
Well, they didn't have enough hospital beds because it's so exploded in population. I mean, the design, on paper, it's a bad idea. I've made the joke about Mega City 1 and Judge Dredd earlier. That's what that looks like. So when something happens in an area like that, or, I mean, heaven forbid, an earthquake hits an area like that, it's magnified. I'm not saying California has done anything right, but look how L.A. County is spread out. Little easier to maintain because of it spread out. St. Louis, certainly not a massive city, and we were the worst in Missouri, in terms of Missouri. But as far as cities that were impacted by this in terms of health, not that bad.
No, Missouri actually.
We're ahead of the game. And, you know, that said, Hayden had her first soccer practice last night. Now, it looks different right now. Her softball league, I just got an email as we were sitting here that we're going to have a little Zoom meeting of managers to let know what the season's going to look like. It starts in a few weeks. So
when is Hayden's first game?
Soccer or softball?
Soccer.
Soccer, we're going to have a tournament in July because the season would – so they essentially scrapped the spring season because we would have a couple weeks left at this point. So we're going to have a couple of tournaments, and then we're already doing tryouts for next fall. And Hayden's team, the tryouts are a formality. Our team has already been picked. And I hate saying this like I am saying this in the air, but the additions that came over from a team that fit, there were the top three teams in the state of Missouri were us and two other. Well, one of those teams dissolved, and their top three, their best defensive player and their two top scorers came and joined us. So we're going to shoot up that into that top 10 in the country list probably because they've done a great job and we're reloaded and it'll be fun. But her softball does start in like 2 weeks, first game. And I, you know, three people on the bench, only one coach in the dugout. And I'm the head coach, so that's me. But the bleachers on the field, softball fields, are going to be used for rollover coaches and players. And then the parents lining down the fence. World's not going to look normal for another year, at least. Yeah. But it's got to look more normal than it does now because I would love to see, like, there was a crazy stat I heard that before this hit, 1 in 8 kids were considered starving, and now it's almost down to 1 in 4 because of the absence of school lunch programs and things like that. And domestic violent cases have went up. I've heard some police officers say that they usually respond to 1 to 2 suicide prevention or suicide calls a month. Now they're responding to 2 to 3 a week. I mean, there's a lot of things that's going to be hard to go back from.
Well, I thought with the domestic abuse, I think I read the concern was the calls have gone down drastically because they think people are afraid to.
Yeah, people are afraid, and then there's no one. They also said one of the contributing factors to that, if some – I'm speaking in just broad terms. I'm using crazy examples. I don't want anybody to get too upset, but if Janet housewife is getting her butt kicked at home, and she does have a job or a part-time job, usually there might be a voice of reason or someone to talk her into making that phone call or doing something. She's not working, neither is he, and they're stuck behind four walls and not letting the outside world in any way. And the fear is magnified. It's amplified. You feel more alone and less likely to stand up for yourself. So, yeah, it's real. I mean, it's real. So I'm with you. We got to get back to normal. But that said, to segue into something I asked Bender the last podcast I was in, when do you think Mr. Hummel or the Silver Badger will be back in person on the episode of Pop Culture Bombcast?
That's a great question. I mean, it depends on what Kelly Young Una says. But I went to the grocery store for the first time since this started 2 days ago.
Oh, wow.
We've been doing Walmart call ahead and then having them put it in our car, and they've been cutting my meat. I just got fucking tired of it, so I'm like, I'm going to Schnucks. I'm getting ground beef. I'm done with this.
Paying $8 a pound for ground beef.
Well, it's expensive.
Yeah, it's not cheap.
They had, but you know what though? They had everything you would want. I mean, meat was probably a third full of what it normally is.
The grocery stores I found have been less hit. We used to be a big time Target shopping family, but their grocery section has not been equipped to handle the panic buying. Grocery stores have. I mean, no one's been immune to the toilet paper shortage, but right. In terms of the meat, the cereals, all the normal stuff. What I've found myself doing is going to get as much as I can from Target because it stays cheaper. Mm-hmm. And then getting the stuff that they don't have at a grocery store. So my grocery store trip, which one, I've never been the grocery buyer, and I don't mind doing it. I just hate being the one to do it because I was picked as the male to be the hunter-gatherer to go out and find food for my family. That was the role I wore. So I've been going to the store, and it went from one stop gradually to two stops. And if you're gonna do something that you don't want to do over and over, the worst thing to do is double the amount of effort it takes to do it. Yeah.
I just went in and I picked up beer and I picked up chicken breast, ground beef, and a brisket, and it was in and out within 10, 15 minutes. There was hardly anybody in there. It wasn't that bad. So
yeah, I even went back to Costco yesterday, and it was easy to get in. I jumped the gun a little bit. I didn't realize they had Thursday morning first hour, old people hour. So I was about 15 minutes too early, so I had to wait that out. And then I went in and got my stuff and left. I mean, now they still didn't have toilet paper, but I've got plenty. So
you wore your mask because, as we've seen on social media, if you don't, Timon or whatever the hell is that guy's name, and we'll kick your ass out.
And that's another thing too, people. I don't like wearing the mask. My kids certainly hate wearing the mask, but Hayden needed new shoes today, so we went to Academy to get her some new shoes. She wore it. I wore it. My wife is not as worried about, let's say, as Rachel or Kelly have been, but she certainly makes me wear the mask when I go out. She doesn't want it, hasn't been going out that much, so I'm okay. And if I go to a business that says you have to wear the mask, I'm blown away. People are wanting to boycott businesses for that. Who cares? It's their job. It's their business. They can deal us with it. If you don't like it, go somewhere else. It's fine.
Yeah, I think I wore a mask when I went to Schnucks. I would bet that I'll probably wear a mask anytime I go out until probably 4th of July. And my guess would be I will be back in the Bohagan Studios mid to late July would be my guess.
Bender said mid-June is what he's shooting for. I said the first day that you guys all say you're back, and I'll tell you like I told Bender, we're going to do a Saturday podcast, Uber here. And we're going to get shit-faced for however long it takes to record and talk about everything while drinking. And just de-evolve into the worst podcast in history. It's fine with me.
I like it. That sounds wonderful.
I will say this in terms of the mask. Now, Hayden's coaches all wore masks last night during coaching. And some of the coaches were miserable when the sun was out. Just miserable. And our club is a massive club, one of the biggest in the world. So I get there's a cover your ass aspect to this that and I get it. When I've been coaching softball, which I have not stopped coaching softball, I've been taking girls out Monday through Thursday in groups of three and doing one-on-one lessons. And then on Sundays, when the rain has cooperated with us, I've broke them into three groups of four. That's how our practice. Now, I have not been wearing a mask for that. And I'll tell you, and I don't mind that our coaches are doing it. I'm okay with the way the appearance of. But in my opinion, if the sun's blazing and you're outdoor in an open area and you guys are all practicing and I can keep the girls separate, we don't have to wear masks. If you're inside, wear a mask. If you're in a business and they want you to wear a mask, wear a mask. I'm okay with it. So,
yeah, I mean, especially with little kids. I mean, this thing doesn't seem to be susceptible or harm kids. It's mainly the old people. And I think, unfortunately, you know, my grandma is in a nursing home in South County. Her birthday's in November. That's probably the next time I'm going to see her. So,
well, my dad is the Keith.
A lot anyway.
My dad is the Keith Richards of our family. He's done more illegal drugs and more damage to his body than he ever. He's sitting in a nursing home in a small town that is not equipped to handle this thing, and I guarantee you that he hasn't had so much of a cough. His body is pickled to the point where no COVID would do better to stay away from him. So,
yeah.
Let's go ahead and wrap up. If there anything that you have, any throw it to Missy segment kind of stuff to talk about, let's do it now and let's see what we got.
It sounds like we're getting closer and closer to the NHL. Going to do a 24-man team tournament. Our 24-team tournament. It's goofy, but how they're going to do it is the top four teams in each conference, which would include the Blues. I will play in a round robin with the other top three teams. So that would be for the Blues, the Knights, the Stars, and the Avalanche.
Okay.
And that is new seeding. Everybody else will be playing either they haven't decided yet, a play-in game or maybe a best of three. But it sounds like they're going to be doing these at host cities. It sounds like the NHL and the NHLPA, that's the Players Association, will have this wrapped up by the weekend. So it might be Monday or Tuesday where we have the official word. But it sounds like the NHL will be the first pro American sports team back.
So they're going to – so the top four will play each other, and that will seed them for how they face the rest of the league?
Right.
All right. Well, that's a weird – that is definitely a weird way of doing it. I think
– the reason they're doing it that way is they don't want to play any exhibition games. They gives the Blues and all the other teams three games that they can play to kind of get back into playoff shape before they start playing playoff intense hockey.
I absolutely agree with that, but I think I would rather see, and I think that every one of these sports franchise in the United States sports leagues, they should adopt a World Cup style of play is what I think. I think instead of taking the top four, maybe just break them up and then seed the rest in groups, and then you come out of your group, you have a knockout round, then you have the final four. I think that makes sense. You get a lot of games and you still, and every game means more.
I think they're doing it this way though, to also reward. So let's say, I mean, goalies get hot. So let's say the Blues end up in a division where they only play three games and then they're done.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I could see that
mentality for that. What you're saying, but
yeah. Are you
I thought that baseball will hopefully be back by the 4th of July, but I mean, apparently the players don't want to take a pay cut and, I don't know. Baseball,
you know,
I guess, is more driven on the attendance. At least that's what the owners are saying. It's still more driven on the attendance than you would think. But I find bullshit. When did the Cardinals sign like a $500 million deal?
Oh, their TV contract with Fox Sports was $1 billion.
Billion, that's right. Yeah, so
That's insane. That baseball's always been the worst of greed on both sides. Whether and I'm a firm believer that if the league's making that much money, the players deserve their cut. But I'm also a firm believer that if the owners say, or if everybody says, we got to tighten our belt loop to figure out how to cope in this world, figure a way out. Now, I will also, though, as history's told us anything, they can survive a non-season. I mean, everybody's been able to, but figure it out and come back and play. It's stupid. You don't think that is if they don't open it? I mean, if they do open up the country back to quote unquote the norm, every game almost in every city is going to be as sellout as it can, because there's going to be those. Go ahead.
I don't think we'll see live sports in 2020.
You don't think so?
Maybe in the fall, but I don't think.
I'm a firm believer in what I've heard in some on-air personalities, whether it's sports, MMA, some others. The NFL is going to have people in the stands. The NFL feels like it's bigger than everybody. It's going to do what it wants.
I've not heard college football, the Power Five conferences are talking about maybe doing like 25% full.
Yeah. The power conferences in college football, their original plan to deal with this shows you the greed and of the maybe the greediest of all sports and the biggest hypocrisy of the student athlete. They were going to do a shortened season and the season. Let's just don't care about the health of the kids whatsoever.
And well, you're also seeing that the fringe sports like cross country, wrestling, soccer are getting cut because of how much football generates. Basically, yeah. Football funds these programs.
Absolutely, and, yeah. On that note, before we wrap up, if you don't have anything else, I will say that because of the lack of sports, I came home last weekend from doing something on a Saturday, and I jumped down on the couch and turned on the TV, and it happened to be on ESPN, probably because I was watching The Last Dance or something, and it was the Cornhole Championships, and I watched it, one, because I got captivated by it, but what initialed the hook of bringing it in is one of the teams that was in this Final Four. Right across the chest, Narrow Gauge Brewing Company was their sponsor. It was a St. Louis team. Go. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah. I was like, I'm in. I've got weight. There's something I'm hooked on into this. I got a dog in the fight.
You and the fam watch that Holy Moly on ABC?
I have not.
It's like, you know what it is?
Uh-uh.
It's basically mini golf mixed with Wipeout.
I've heard there was a mini golf thing.
Yeah. They did a season last summer, I guess. And we watched it and liked it as a family. So we watched it. Kelly and I were way more interested in it than the boys. But, hey, you know, Rob Riggle's a funny guy.
Yeah, I like Rob Riggle, if that's for sure. I will tell you this, too. This season of The Challenge, and Entertainment Weekly has said it, and there's been a lot of coverage on it. It's one of the best ones of all time so far. And
one day we'll get MTV again.
We saw CT get kicked off. We saw Rogan. I don't know if you saw Rogan ever.
He got eliminated.
There was a young rookie that eliminated three guys right out of the gate. This one, you have to win an elimination in order to qualify for the final.
Yeah. Okay.
And the guys are being dumb. They all keep trying to wait. And TJ keeps saying, guys, you're running out of time. If you don't have a red skull, you're not going. But there was a, you know, the old football game or the game where you have to run to the center where there's a basket in the center and try to put it in, and the guy's so the guy, the rookie that eliminated three vets and was really, you know, everybody was like, oh, he's the dark horse. He's going to run through this thing. Had three skulls. Rogan, who's a big guy, was a friend of CT. The very first time the guy took off, he tackled him, broke his arm, and he's out.
Oh, wow.
He destroyed him. Destroyed him.
Well, we've been getting here at Casa de Homo our challenge kicked by watching Johnny Bananas in the Worst Cooks in America Celebrity Edition on Sunday night.
He's on that. I didn't know that.
He survived the first cut, so it's down to him and five others.
That's awesome.
And it's funny because like they had a contest. Who's that really tall, goofy looking comedian? It's like Brian
Posehn.
Yeah. So he was on Johnny's team with Uncle Joey, Dave Coulier. And they were going against Robin Givens and somebody from The Bachelor and whatever. But
worth watching, though.
Brian was cooking, and like Johnny's like doing his like challenge, like, hey, do that, do this, do that, do this. And like the other team was getting like incensed that he was like helping him. I'm like, this is classic Johnny.
Yeah. Now, I'll say this, since you talked about Bananas being Bananas, this season the biggest plot thread, maybe the most enjoyable for me, is Team Bananas. Wes and Bananas were finally exposed that they're working together this year, and they're essentially not, with the exception of neither has a red skull, they've been winning every elimination and everything has went the way they've wanted because they're running the show.
Bananas is the best.
Yeah.
He's Michael Jordan of the challenge.
Yeah. We brought it up this last episode, though. He's still yet to win an elimination or go to a final since screwing Sarah over.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I know. So we'll see what happens. And because of that, I think he teamed up with the devil, him and Wes, as a partnership. So let's call it good. No one else is here to say bye. We kind of rambled at the end, but that's okay. We haven't seen each other. Faces in a while, so I love your slick hair. Pro Wrestling Badger is a good one, so let them know.
And I cannot be more excited for Double or Nothing, the stadium event between the Inner Circle and the Elite. It is good. I haven't been this giddy for a wrestling event in probably 20 years. So
awesome.
Hey, I shouldn't say let's go Blues. It's just, probably right now it should be more like it's just too sweet.
On that note, we are wrapping it up. I'll talk to you later, my man. I've missed you. This was fun. Later, my man.